Welcome, everybody, to your journey through Time Lords and Space, also known as The Lonely TARDIS, episode, I guess you could say season three-ish, episode three-ish, focusing on Listen and Robot of Sherwood in no particular order.
I was going to say, that's kind of backwards.
It's kind of backwards, yeah. Robot of Sherwood and then Listen. The last two episodes, we didn't have an episode last week of the podcast due to some scheduling and the release of Destiny that we've been all playing on our PlayStations, but
and internet issues
and so forth. But we got everybody together for at least a good chunk today. I'm excited.
I'm excited.
Yeah, it should be good. We've had a lot to talk about, a lot to watch over these last couple weeks, and a lot of great fan feedback. And we're going to go over it all now. Again, I am Dolly Domofsky. Joining me as usual is Stephen Strum.
Yeah, that's me.
Sean Norton.
Hello.
And Marcus Beer.
L'chaim.
L'chaim. And I will say in Macedonian, zdravo, which means to health and hello. All right. We got a lot to cover. Yeah.
Fake.
It's true, actually.
I didn't mean the words. I'm sure that's real, but like the country, Macedonia.
We're in fairy tales.
It's like Wales or something like that. You know, something that everybody knows is fictional.
Whales are animals, though. So, like the Norwal.
You know what? If it wasn't for whales, this conversation would not be happening. So you guys can shut the fuck up.
You know what? Fair enough. Are
you guys gonna secede like Scotland's doing tomorrow?
Probably not. I'm sure there'll be some. If Scotland does go, I'm sure Wales will get a lot more clout. England will be like, oh, we can't lose Wales too, because then of course they won't be able to have Doctor Who.
This is correct. Yeah, you're right. Actually, that's a great point.
So yes, we were. You know, it's interesting. I mean, my thoughts on I'm not as informed as I should be on the whole devolution and the independence thing, because I don't care really.
What's interesting then? They would totally change the entire Doctor Who timeline if Scotland does end up leaving. But anyways, enough politics. The only politics that we care about are those that take place in ancient UK, Great Britain, Robin Hood times, and future politics, I guess you could say.
Yeah, even back then, politicians were dicks.
Exactly. So we're going to talk about Robot of Sherwood and Listen, and we're going to try something a little bit different this week because we didn't not get to last week's episode on our episode. We didn't have one, but we're going to talk both them together and just super quick recap, maybe the quickest one ever. Last week's episode, Clara wants to meet Robin Hood, so the doctor says, yeah, there's no such thing as Robin Hood, but I'll take you back in time to prove that. They go back in time, meet Robin Hood, meet the Sheriff of Nottingham. There's robots and aliens, and in the end, Robin Hood and the doctor win. This week's episode, Listen, kind of all over the place time-wise, but it's about the things that go bump in the night, things that make your hair stand on the back of it, of your neck stand on end, and we end up going to the farthest point in the future. You're right. And we meet another time traveler, Rupert, or no, I'm sorry, Azza Ormond?
Yep, you got it. That's Ormond. Remember.
That's it. Pink. Then we come back in time to the present day, and Danny Pink and Clara do their hooking up. And that's kind of where we stand right now, in the shortest possible summation. Again, thematically, a lot of stuff went, you know, kind of happened these last couple episodes. Let's just dive into it. I'm gonna hop in with my thoughts, and I'm sure you guys are gonna tear me down. But thematically, what I really found interesting about these two episodes, and they work together really well, even though they were standalone episodes, was that they focused on the Doctor trying to disprove things that aren't scientifically proven, right? He's looking for the most logical explanation, whether it's things that are in the far future, or things that happened to him, as we found out this week, or things in the past. There's no such thing as Robin Hood. He's all made up. And both times, in the case of Robin Hood, we come to find out that the Doctor was wrong. And in case of Listen, We don't quite know what happened. But I really like this take, these two episodes, because, again, thematically, it's the Doctor trying to prove everything through science and logic, and everybody around him is telling him something different than that. So I think thematically that's what I was really drawn to. I don't know, anybody else pick up on that?
All right. Okay. Here we go. Because I'm going to be bugging out in a little while, and I've got observations. So first of all, remember the last time we spoke, I was having nightmares about watching Robot of Sherwood and blah blah blah, and terrified how bad it looked. I actually enjoyed it.
Okay.
I thought, I mean, Mark Gatiss kind of pulled it off. It did suffer from that whole returning to the well thing that is the Doctor's or the arch of this series. I mean, it harkened back to the Lodger, where there was, you know, that was the episode where there was a ship above, you know, above the flat. This time there's a ship in Sherwood Forest or in Nottingham, and it's Nottingham, not Nottingham.
Sorry.
The 80s, yeah. It's all right. I'm here to educate.
I'm a Merkin.
Yeah, don't worry about it. So, yes, I thought that was an entertaining romp. I thought it was amusing. It's, you know, it's another retread, like I said. But, yeah, I thought it was, you know, it was amusing. We saw, you know, the Doctor more and more as a grumpy old man who just is pissed off at everything. And I can relate to that, bizarrely enough. And then, so yes, I was like, okay. And then was the trailer for, you know, the next episode, Ed. And I was like, oh, okay. Hands under the bed. Creepy. Things out of the corner of your eye. Something, you know, has been used again. For example, the 11th hour. You know, that phrase. But it's Stephen Moffat. So, you know, this is the guy who gave us the Weeping Angels and the Vashta Narada. So, yeah, this could be good. And then I watched it. Hands down, the worst Doctor Who episode of the season, and probably one of the worst of the last, oh, I don't know, 50 years. I mean, it was just, I mean, again, this whole going to the ends of time. I mean, let's face it, I don't know how many men there are at the end of time, but there's obviously more than just one because the Doctor's fucking met them all.
Yeah.
I mean, every incarnation, he buggers off to the very end of time and finds somebody there. So, I mean, it's obviously can't be the end, or, you know, it can't be the last person alive. So, you know, we
wasn't
have
the Master one of them? Like a
that's
couple
what I
seasons
was wondering.
Back?
The whole episode was just like, what happened to Utopia and Dr. Yana and all this stuff and that end of time thing? Like, the TARDIS specifically ran away to try and get as far away from Captain Jack as possible, so it went to the very end of time. And yet, like, none of that is even acknowledged. It's never even mentioned in the entire episode.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's obviously that aspect. And then, you know, the whole, I you know, I kind of liked the initial sort of, like, you know, Danny Pink, Clara thing. Because, again, it was, as we've discussed before, it, like, takes you out of it as to, you know, what else is going on. And then I can, you know, I could see the logic of coming from the dodgy date to putting her hands in the TARDIS telepathic matrix and... you know, all of a sudden they're back in his time. But I thought there was going to be something interesting. I thought there was going to be a new monster or a new bad guy or something that needed, you know, whether it be rescuing or relocating or whatever, something trapped. And then just to get to the very end and the whole thing that it's Clara again in the Doctor's timeline. I mean, she's in the Doctor's timeline now, more than the Master, more than the Rani,
more than the Doctor.
The Daleks. I mean, yeah, it's ridiculous. I mean, you know, he would remember that voice. And I mean, yes, it was a nice touch to go back to the barn where he would sleep as a child for some reason to see so people didn't hear him crying. But I just... I mean, people have said that, you know, and Dali and I were discussing this before we recorded, that, you know, some people have said that this is the best Doctor Who episode they've ever seen. And I can only think that they've probably only seen one episode of Doctor Who then. Because this is a spectacular, I mean, it was world-class Moffat. It was pure Moffat, as in not the Moffat who would write two or three times a season, not the Moffat who wrote the 50th anniversary. This is... self-indulgent, I'm in charge of Doctor Who, I'm going to fuck with the canon left, right, and center, I'm going to screw over Russell T. Davis's, settings. I'm going to screw over, you know, Terry Nations and, you know, everybody over the, you know, the past 50 years, because I'm Stephen fucking Moffat, and I'm imagining he's only going to get worse because he's got a fucking Emmy now. So, I mean, I am, you know, this, every time we start this conversation, it always ends up in Moffat's got to go, but he has to. If he is gone, if he is still in charge of Doctor Who next season, I don't think I'll watch. I think I will ignore the first 5 episodes, and I will wait until all the reviews are in, because I cannot stand to see what this man is doing, especially with such a great Doctor. I mean, you know, Capaldi is crotchety and kind of bipolar and a little all over the place, which is good. I mean, it gives us variety, but he's just being so mishandled. Hated it. Moffat, please resign. Go and write Coupling 2 or, you know, whatever. Stick with Sherlock. He's obviously doing a great job with Sherlock, which I like. But honestly, you know, bring somebody else in.
So, we are now accepting open invitations for the first 5 episodes of next season's Lonely TARDIS. strong emotions there. This one, what was really interesting about this episode is it really did elicit either loved it or hated it. There was no middle ground for a reaction to this episode. At least not any that I really saw. A lot of people were saying it was either a complete mess, and we've had a few people that would tweet it at us that said that. Other folks, me included, think it was a fantastic episode. I loved this episode, Marcus. I'm sorry. I'm not sorry. I really enjoyed this.
How much of a Macedonian drink were you chugging down?
This was actually, I think I had quite a bit of peach schnapps mixed in with other fruity things. You know, what I really enjoyed about this episode, not the whole screwing up previous Doctor timelines and events and going to the end of the world, but I love the not knowing part. Okay, I love that the Doctor is afraid and he's trying to solve this fear. Unfortunately, they did use Clara to kind of elicit this fear a little bit with her initial, you know, in the barn grabbing his leg. But we know the Doctor is trying to solve things through logic. And so everything that happened on the ship that Future Pink was on, he tried to say, "Oh, that's just the gas. You know, that's the air compressors. That's the gears lining up. That's the vents pounding. Everything can be explained by logic," because he doesn't want to deal with his own fears, which were set off by Clara.
Dude, what opened the door?
We don't know. And you know what? I'm happy not knowing what opened the door. I would rather never find out and always wonder and think, okay, the monster wasn't an actual monster this time. The monster was fear and unknowing. That's what the monster of the week was.
I'm just going to jump in because, like I said, I've got to go quick in a few.
Yeah, yeah.
So after every, you know, Future Pink.
I like that name.
Right on the door. Don't open the door.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't want to stay out there another night because he was terrified of what happens in the night.
Mm-hmm.
So are you saying that this is all because his great-great-great-great-grandfather was, you know, was scared in a children's home in the 1980s, and this has somehow been passed on? No, it's classic Moffat. It's classic bait and switch in not a good way at all. He builds it up and then thinks, "Oh, I'm going to be really cute," and then put Clara in. There were all, you know, it does it, as an episode, dude. It doesn't fucking make sense.
No,
seriously, there is no logic whatsoever. Otherwise, Future Pink is totally superfluous, totally not needed. Something opened that airlock. Something scared the shit out of him. But no, all of a sudden, we've got to have these longing looks. Like, is he Clara's great great granddaughter? Is, you know, is he not? You know, did Danny Pink shag somebody else? Is that why, you know, why they look so alike? And yeah, no, it was too much bad Moffat.
Yeah, no,
I hate to say this, Dali, but you are wrong. And I'm wagging my finger at you. Wagging my finger. So, let's see.
I wanted to cut in exactly specifically because of that, Marcus, because you mentioned that, like, the part about so like Dally, you make the point that like you like not knowing, that you like that it's just basically the fear and all that stuff, and I think that there are two kind of issues, if not like, if maybe not issues so much, just like reasons for me to disagree with that. And the two reasons are, the first one is, it's kind of the one that I was thinking of the entire time I was watching the episode, or once I had the episode anyway, that if it was just that moment that is not named, then that's fine. But it happens throughout the episode, and by the end of it, we are asked by Moffat, by the writing team, to say to ourselves, like, oh, okay, here's just this string of coincidences that just happened to happen the way that they did in this exact order of events in right when they were thinking about it for the first time for no apparent reason. So the door, sure, if it was just the door, whatever, because they build in like a little thing that says like, what, you know, it might have just been air decompression or whatever. But then it's not just the door, it's the kid or the whatever, you know, the blanket and everything like that. There's this blanket who doesn't thing monster kid apparently that doesn't want to be seen just at the exact moment that they don't want to be that they think that there's a thing that doesn't want to be seen. They say that nothing entered the room. They know that nothing entered the room. They're unable to hear it or see it or anything like that, and then that's never explained. Like, that's never explained throughout the entire episode. And then you get the door at the end, and, like, that's not explained at all. And then you get all these different things all kind of, confluxing together, like, these, like, you know, with Danny Pink and, like, Clara's timeline and everything like that with the future stuff. And, like, that's never explained, really. Like, I mean, I get why she jumped around and everything like that, but then here's this other thing. Like, we never find out if she is related to him or not, or, you know, if what's going to happen there. It's just like, it just keeps raising constant questions, and by the end of it, it has closed none of the loops. And I don't think it does anything in a satisfying way, mostly because by the end of it, like, I think what they tried to do, to your point about like it being about like fear and everything like that, I think that is interesting, but the way that they arrive at that conclusion at the end is by setting up, like Marcus said, a bait and switch, where they say, you know, this episode is going to be about this idea, this thing, like, we're going to say, like, what happens when the doctor is, like, puzzled and, like, afraid and stuff like this, and by the end, we might get some interesting ideas about what he is like by the end of it, but then by the end of it, it says, like, no, it was actually about him being afraid the whole time, and, like, they prop up one really interesting pillar and then decide to ignore it because they wanted to do this other pillar, like, they had this other thing all in mind the whole time. But because they, you know, go one route instead of the other, they decide that they don't have to close any of those loops, if that makes any sense. Kind of went long-winded there, but that's kind of how I feel about it.
Sean, your thoughts?
I heard a sigh.
First of all, I think you're overthinking the Clara-Danny Pink thing, because it's only episode 4, and they are very obviously teasing out that they're going to get together, and that they're going to have many babies, and one of them is going to be a time traveler in its second or third generation. I don't think that could have been any clearer unless they came out of the TV and slapped you with the telepathic matrix right in the face. So I think you're harping on that a little too much. Now, I'm a big Moffat detractor, and this episode was full of Moffat tropes. Full of them! So I get absolutely where you guys are coming from with the whole reusing the corner of your eye thing and the breath on your neck and don't blink and all this stuff. But oddly enough, I don't have the issue with it that a lot of people seem to do. And I think I was talking to Stephen about this the other night where actually I even said it out loud while I watched the episode at, you know, based on that ending, I was like, this is going to divide people something mm-hmm. fierce, and people are going to be really upset about this with Clara being another, you know, she's the key, you know, thing in his past, and she's one of the reasons why this comes to, you know, be a part of his personality 2,000 years later. And whatever. I mean, like, Moffat is going to clearly leave his mark with these companions that are more influential on the Doctor than anybody has been in 50 years, and, you know, I could see why that bugs people. It doesn't bug me as much this time, for whatever reasons. I can't even really explain it. I enjoyed the episode. And I think that you guys are overlooking the real focus here on the fear that can be built into your subconscious as a child, which permeated the whole episode, right? Like, even somebody as the Doctor, who they pointed out in the very beginning had been traveling by himself for a while, and I'm pretty sure in the beginning was having a bit of a breakdown and showing signs of madness, which was awesome. Props to Capaldi for that whole intro scene. And I think it just goes to show that, like, there's these, again, Moffat tropes aside, I thought it was a very good look at the fear that, you know, of potentially nothing. I personally hope that there was some monster, but I totally get if there wasn't. I totally get if these guys were just having these sort of psychological breaks because of this overwhelming fear of what was out the door, even if there was nothing there, or what was under the bed, even if it was the weirdest kid ever playing a prank on people that were standing behind him. And how confused would that kid must have been, right? Like, if it wasn't a monster, it was just a kid. Like, why are these people looking at me? All right, admittedly, that was kind of goofy. But in general, I really liked the theme of it.
Mm-hmm.
I really liked what they were trying to say. And I actually really liked the idea of the doctor being so far into his own head and subconscious fears, which most people actually turns out they share, of what goes bump in the night, that this is sort of like a fabricated thing. But at the same time, if we wind up coming back to this God complex style and there really was a monster and the doctor's justified because, you know, whatever, then I'm fine with that too. But they established throughout the whole episode from the very beginning, like Clara's like, well, I didn't, you know, the doctor's like, I didn't write that on the board. She's like, are you sure? Because it looks like your handwriting. And he's like, well, I wouldn't forget, would I? And she's like, have you met you? So like there were these things layered throughout the whole episode that really did, in my opinion, built up pretty well the is it or isn't real.
That's what I was trying to remember, that whole conversation. I was trying to remember the other thing that they, the other loop that they never closed, and it was the handwriting.
The only, you again, with the loop closed thing, there was a point, like that was the whole point, is to set up the open-ended, is it all in their heads or is there a real monster? You're focusing on the Clara Danny pink loop, which it's too early. They're clearly playing that out for the whole season. Mm-hmm. And they're laying the groundwork for what those two are going to be. Unless there's some weird Moffat-y timey-wimey twist and she's going to wind up dying, or he's going to die, or he's going to be the master or something. But as of now, all the groundwork is laid there for that him. That was him as a kid, and that was their great-great-grandson in the future.
I just want to point out, like, as you mentioned that, I should, like, I don't think I made my, I definitely didn't make myself clear because I wanted to, like, explain my position on the ending and stuff like that. I do not hate this episode as much as Marcus, and I am not one of the people who loves or hates this episode, like Dally pointed out. I actually love this episode for, like, however long, you know, TV runtime is these days, you know, it's 42 minutes or whatever. And I love this episode for, like, the first 37 of those minutes. Like, I think that they, like, performances are great. Like, Capaldi's great. Clara is probably, like, between this episode and the last episode, probably better than ever. Like, I love this idea of her, like, do as you're told kind of attitude. Like, the fact that she works at a school and has a life outside of the doctor, and then he comes and, to her, like, he is waiting on her call. Like,
yep. And he trusts her completely.
It's very Donna-like.
He lets her go do her thing. He doesn't, you know, he doesn't have to hold her hand.
Reminds me of Donna, yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is good. That's exactly what we wanted. We wanted some sort of development there.
I love that. I love the, like, weird sort of almost Groundhog Day-ish, like, sort of dinner scenes. I love all that. I love the tension that the episode builds. Like, when you still think it might just be a monster, like, the tension that is happening is all great and interesting. And I actually do like the idea of having an episode that is based entirely on the Doctor imagining something, like, you know, or, like, somebody thinking that something is fake. Or something that is real that is not there. I like that idea, but, like, by the end of it, like, they decide to turn it into something else that doesn't have to do with that. Like, if it had ended with a Midnight-style ending where it's just like, oh, the big reveal is actually that there was no monster all along, and that, like, if you travel alone for too long like this for those many centuries.
But that's exactly what happened. It happened to Danny Pink, or whatever Orson, whatever Future Orson. Pink is. Orson, Future, yeah. Pink.
Future
Pink. It happened to him because he was by himself for 6 months. That's the whole point, is to implicate, okay, well, it could have been a monster, or he could have been going crazy.
No, that's not the whole point. The whole point by the end of the episode is, here's this tie-in to why the Doctor has companions, because we need to, I'm Moffat, and even though Russell T. Davies gives 700 explanations as to why the Doctor is the way he is, I need to say why I think he is the way he is by writing an event that made that happen. Like, that's the part that makes everything fall down for me. Is the under the bed thing. Like, all had to be based on something like that, like some kind of weird MacGuffin at the end. Like, and it wasn't just that the Doctor is just as susceptible to fear as any other human being that would just be out there. Like, they undermine that by saying, like, oh, actually, it was based on this one timey-wimey adventure thing that nobody else in the world would ever have because they're not the Doctor, and really it can't just be left alone. Like, we can't just leave that idea of him being afraid alone. There has to be a reason for it. there has to be a reason for why he likes to travel with people outside of his own personality and outside of the hundreds that we've already given.
But there'll be 100 more too. I mean, like, that's kind of that's the mark of a showrunner. Like, all the showrunners come on and they all put their own spin on the mythos, right? And that's how it's always going to be. It's always going to evolve and change. And granted, I'm in completely agreement that, you know, he overindulges and his mark is probably bigger than any other. But at the same time, I just can't agree that, you know, the ending is this kind of terrible thing that wants, you know, like, if it keeps up, I'd be turned off on the show forever. Like, I feel like he's done so much worse that whole weird under the bed, was it or wasn't a monster kind of thing, it doesn't bother me as much as it probably should. You know what really does bother me, though? How did they get to the barn? How does the TARDIS get to the barn?
The TARDIS always knows.
These are the things that bother me. Yeah. Is like the weird, like, holes and loops and stuff. Like, isn't the I assume the barn's on Gallifrey, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, isn't
on Gallifrey when
time locked at that point, and then put in a bubble universe somewhere else? Like, if it can go to that barn, can it go anywhere in Gallifrey's or the Doctor's history? Like, these are the things that bother me.
Yeah, it's that,
not the hand under the bed.
Things like that, and then like we mentioned earlier, things like the end of time thing, which is like, not it like building your own legacy is fine, but like, he's just ignoring everybody else's legacy in favor of his. Like, there's all these different reasons why so much of this is like, things should be mentioned and things should be impossible, yet at no point do they ever explain any of it. Like, it's never even mentioned, it's never acknowledged, nothing, none of it whatsoever, and it's just so weird.
So here's a couple things that I really noticed from this episode right at that very end. Clara continues, you know, makes it a point to tell the Doctor never to kind of take a peek at where they just were. And he says, why? She says, just don't, you know, just don't look at where we just were. Just fly away. Forget we ever got here. Remember that. And then the last line that she says to the young Doctor, to the kid Doctor, says, fear makes companions of us all, which, if I remember correctly, that is a line that the Doctor spoke in the first Doctor spoke in Unearthly Child. He says, fear makes companions of us all. They're interesting things, but it is Moffat, you know, sorry, fucking with history of the Doctor again, trying to put his stamp and saying,
most important companion ever.
Yeah.
But you know what? I think I came to terms with that when she jumped into his time stream and saved his life a million times. Like,
yeah.
I mean, like, we established last year that she was, like, Moffat had already made her as important or more important than anybody else that came before. So the fact that she touches his ankle as a kid, like, it, I'm so far past her, like she is what she is now, right? Like, she is ingrained as this huge savior and massive influence on his timeline and his development as a character. So I don't know. I just can't get worked up about it because so much with her has already happened that whatever. Yep.
So, but I do think one thing that I learned from this episode, after a lot of the other things that she said, that her interactions with the pink fellas, the mystery army man that she gave to the Doctor as a kid, but we haven't seen since then. At least I haven't seen since then. I think this is Clara's last season on the on Doctor Who. I think this episode had a lot of things pointing to her character, because she was so important. The course of her, necessity of her being there played out obviously at the tail end of last season, and this season is working its way out right now and showing the Doctor who he actually is and the initial path that she kind of pushed him towards with companions and fear. And maybe that's the reason the Doctor always has companions, because he's always been afraid since that very first fateful meeting under the bed. But I think this to me spells the beginning of the end of Clara as a character on the show, or at least as a recurring character on the show. I mean, I think she'll play out the rest of the season, and then I think that's gonna be it for her. Which I'm okay with, because she did a fantastic job, especially this season. So, anybody else get that vibe? Like her, she had her big giant moment last year, and this year she's already had a big giant moment just four episodes in.
So, I don't know if I got that vibe, but you bringing up the whole mention of her saying like never go there, never mm-hmm. look through what is out there, like I'm the implication there is that the doctor doesn't know where they are.
Mm-hmm.
So my thought now that you mentioned that and brought that to my attention is just like what if. Because they've got, like, the fact that the discrepancy that they shouldn't be able to go to Gallifrey, like, Clara mm-hmm. knows about that. She knows about the Time War and all that stuff. She's seen it. She's been there and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
So she must know that was Gallifrey and that they shouldn't be able to get there. So when she told the Doctor not to open that, she knew she was telling him not to notice that they could suddenly go to Gallifrey. So maybe her, like, ulterior motive here is not to keep, like, what I originally thought was just like her ulterior motive was just to not interfere with his own time stream. My thought was then is now, like, what if she was basically telling him she's trying to hide the fact that you can that he, the like Gallifrey is like free now, like it's you can just go there whenever you want, and he hasn't realized it for whatever reason, and he's trying to make sure he doesn't know about that for some reason of her own.
Great.
I've been too quiet.
Yeah.
All right, couple of things. First of all, there's no guarantee that Clara and Pink will get together. I mean, let's face it, and this is why Stephen Moffat thinks he is the most clever person in the Doctor Who universe, and he is so far up his own ass, and he loves his bait and switch, as we've seen. My hugest problem, you know, with this episode was that it's another case of blue balls, which he loves to give everybody. It's like, this is going cool, what the hell? Plus, this has been done before, and it's been done better. I direct you to Amy's Choice, where everybody's on the TARDIS, and there's this hallucinogen trapped in the time rotor, and they keep on switching back from world to world, and there's this other doctor, and they don't know what's going on. I thought that was a really cool episode in the way it executed. And I think that was much better, you know, done much better when it came to tapping into people's fears. I mean, you know, what was Rory's, you know, dream of him being a doctor and marrying, you know, Amy and having a kid was Amy's kind of worst nightmare, and Doctor was kind of, you know, trying to save everybody, and the thought of losing them was his biggest nightmare. So I thought that one did it much, much better. But yeah, it comes down to Moffat and his smugness, and I'm kind of over it. I mean, you know, he is crap. He's beginning to crap over a lot of of history, and I, you know, this season, where, you know, Clara's had some shining points. You know, Capaldi has done stellar work with what he's had to deal with, but this has not been you know, a season for the you know, for the record books for any good reasons so far. And you know, it's just incredibly disappointing. And you know, the reason I'm like, you know, I don't want to be, you know, be watching this in another 2 years' time with Moffat at the helm, is that he is sapping my enjoyment of Doctor Who, something that has been in life for 40 years. And he is starting to ruin that experience for me on a weekly basis. And I'm sorry, that's unacceptable.
You know, we were so high coming off the 50th anniversary episode, too. We're like, oh, Moffat did it. He's back.
Well, yeah, wait a minute. I didn't lose that high in the beginning with Capaldi. Like, I might not be as high as I was on the 50th, but
you're always high, though.
I think I'm a PTSD Doctor Who fan right now, where it's just like, where like I'm just like in denial that this is gonna happen all over again, because I want it to not. Like, I want the rest of the season to pan out, and I want that vintage Moffat stuff, and I want everything to be good. So like, I feel like I'm the one on the team right now where like Marcus doesn't even clearly see what's coming. And I'm just like battered Doctor Who syndrome. Like, I'm just like the battered Doctor Who wife. I'm just like, nope, it's gonna be fine. It's gonna be different this time. I'm taking him back. And it just, I don't know.
Riversong would never allow herself to get in such a situation.
Oh, speaking of Riversong and loves and our mysterious new madam, this is the first episode that they didn't mention her or the Promised Land. They did mention the Promised Land in Robot of Sherwood.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I'm okay with.
Yeah, I
was worried that it was going to dominate every episode. And yeah. The fact that it's basically gone for two episodes, quite okay with me.
Yeah, they're weaving it in pretty well now, I think. I was hesitant at first, but now I'm
back. And guys, I got to put you at you.
Thank you, sir. Sorry.
I gotta run. I will look forward to hearing the rest of the podcast and hearing all your thoughts. Yeah. And any positive thoughts on this episode are obviously wrong.
I sense that we're going to be moving over to Robot of Sherwood very quickly. And before we do, I just wanted to say one last dumb thing about this episode.
Oh, I'm not done yet.
Oh, really? Okay. Well, I just want to say my dumb thing, and I want to hear you guys' theories, or your opinions. So in my head, what was happening with the barn at the end of the episode, before it had, they pulled out John Hurt, to keep the budget down, to reuse, a good
stock footage.
John
Hurt walking up to a barn appears in a lot of TV shows. It just happened to be Doctor Who this time.
And all these different, always holding a bag. Like, what bag could be anything.
You should have seen him in Coupling. It was amazing.
So before I got to that point, my theory of where I thought it was going, and I was super excited that this is where I thought it was going, and I thought I was a genius for figuring it out, and then of course I was so bummed about the ending, was that this whole thing was going to be, okay, she's talking to this kid, she's talking to him, and it's like, okay, she's talking to a Time Lord. It's clearly a Time Lord, because they mentioned the word Time Lord. It's like, and then what's going to happen is the Doctor is going to pop out there, and he's going to figure it out. And it's going to not be the Doctor that she's been talking to this whole time. She's going to have been talking to the Master.
Yeah, yeah.
And then at the last second...
Yeah, that was a super prominent theory afterwards, yeah.
And then I thought it was this is going to be a two-parter episode. We're going to have this, sedate, creepy pace of this whole thing. And then we're going to have another part, second part, where they're racing through time and against time to do a Master story. And he's back and all this stuff, or he's changed bodies, or he's a woman or whatever. And then all the stuff that hasn't been explained yet is going to be explained there. And then they pull out stock footage of John Hurt. And that's the ending. And I'm like, are we sure that's the ending?
You know what? You do bring up a great point. And it's one that I don't want. I'm not echoing Marcus's thoughts about Stephen Moffat ruining Doctor Who, because I'm still on a Doctor Who high. I still love Doctor Who.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
Yeah, but I do wish that things were there were less integral and more fun. Like Robot of Sherwood, it was a standalone Doctor Who episode, which yeah, I made it was very campy. I wasn't maybe it was just at night. I wasn't in a campy mood, and I really wasn't into that style of Robin Hood. I would have liked something maybe a little bit more real or gritty. But campiness aside, it was a lot of fun to watch, and I kind of missed those Doctor Who episodes. Since Moffat took over, he tried to inject a lot of meaning and deep thematic elements into Doctor Who, and it doesn't always need to be there, and he doesn't need to go back in time to old moments in the Doctor's history. He can just enjoy the Doctor as is, and I was actually hoping that 50th anniversary with the introduction to Capaldi, soon after that, was going to be the cutoff point and fresh. You never have to have seen a previous Doctor Who episode before this. Here you go, have fun. Enjoy, America. This is going to be great. I was really hoping for that, and it's not. I think that's what's disappointing me, is that it's not that.
Yeah, if you came into this, if you're a new listener to the podcast, and if you're a new visitor to Doctor Who in general, and you try to, you said, okay, new season, new Doctor, this is my jumping on point. Yeah. Boy, are you in for a surprise, because this is probably the worst regeneration I've ever seen for, a jumping on point for people.
It's been four episodes. We're still regenerating. When you think about it,
basically, I mean, he's still getting over. He's still trying to figure out who he is. Like the stuff that Matt Smith would figure out with a wink and a bow tie. Mm-hmm. He Capaldi is still doing it, which is fine. I think that's interesting as someone who has been watching this for, God, more than probably a decade now. Mm-hmm. And that's cool. But if you're a new viewer,
I had a kind of draw a let me get to this parallel real quick, Sean. I had a buddy of mine, a close friend, who posted on Facebook last week sometime and said, just watched the first episode of the first season of Doctor Who of the modern era. I don't get it. I don't like it. I don't understand what's good about this. It's not appealing to me. This is obviously Christopher Eccleston. Does it get better? Should I stick around with it? And I wanted to chime in with get through these first couple episodes. You're going to have three of the most amazing years of television in your life. It's sci-fi television in your life. And then you're going to get to the Matt Smith, the Moffat era, the Capaldi era. And by that, hopefully by then you'll have caught up on everything to understand what Doctor Who actually is. It's kind of like jumping into watching Lost after season, you know, starting with season four, after the hatch has been opened, when they go back in time and go through all that. That's kind of like what Doctor Who is right now. So, yeah. Anyway, sorry to cut you off, Sean.
It's okay. Sean
is just so resigned. He's just like, whatever.
Whatever. Doctors.
Well, I think that's a great point, is that's how it kind of always is. Well, maybe not always is, but some people have that. Like, I had to do the same thing with somebody the other day, and I was like, listen, power through, or you know what, skip ahead. Like, mm-hmm. if you think it's too cheesy or whatever, skip ahead. The good thing about the show is that even if people aren't on board right now with Capaldi or don't get it or whatever, which, by the way, I haven't really heard. I mean, I don't have a ton of insight onto the folks that don't, you know who. Mm-hmm. But I am currently dating a lady who doesn't know who, and Capaldi is her first doctor.
You mean formerly dating?
Formerly dating.
It's a joke.
I don't get it.
Never mind. I don't get it either, but that's okay. Maybe in the future I'll get it and I'll come back.
God Dally, just
future stop. Norton. Future Norton will come.
And yeah. So, but she's really liking it.
Sean just muted me.
Perfect.
No, but it's funny. Like I don't know if that disconnect is there, or if we're just so close to it that we, I don't know. Maybe our standards are different, but. Watching her watch it and enjoy it, and she's, you know, she's into Capaldi, she's into Clara, like she's like, in fact, she said that she thinks Listen is probably her favorite episode so far.
Yeah.
Hold on, time out.
No, it's cool.
And I had her go back, and I was like, listen, we just watched that episode with the Clockwork Robots or whatever. You should really go back and watch Girl in the Fireplace. And so her first Tenet episode is Girl in the Fireplace, which she liked a lot, but she's like, I think I like this Capaldi thing more than that. And I'm in my head, I'm like, holy God, like there's just no way, right?
Yeah,
but it all comes back to what you're introduced to and when. And who, like, I honestly think moving forward, assuming she sticks with, you know, the show, the doctor and me, I think Capaldi will always be her doctor, right? Mm. Like Tennant is mine, and some people have Eccleston or Baker or whatever. I think that Capaldi is doing a fine job. I don't think the series is in the dire straits that some people think it is. I don't think Moffat is killing Doctor Who, as I have seen threads pop up and conversations emerge. Do I think that he has put his fingerprints all over the show more than anybody else? I think there's absolutely an argument to be made there. And again, like I'm the guy that was so exhausted by him that I just was like broken, right? Like I was just like, man, last season was so disappointing and I know it's coming, blah, blah, blah. But I can't, I really liked Listen. And I thought, you know, Robot of Sherwood was fun. And even Into the Dalek was a good, you know, a good look at the lore and stuff, even though it was kind of goofy. And there's definitely been goofy, you know, there's definitely been goofy stuff this season. But I don't know. I just can't. I don't have the ire that that Marcus has. And I wonder if that's a kind of disconnect between fans who have watched the show for 35 or 40 mm-hmm. years and have such a perspective on what the show should be or shouldn't be, or, you know, have that growing up and the better eras and stuff. And then, like, to them, all this Moffat stuff is way more sacrilege than it even is to us. And we see the, you know, the problems he's had, right? Mm-hmm. Versus people who are watching now and don't have as much of an issue with it, right? So I don't know. I'd be curious where that line is, if there's even a line, or if it really just depends on the person and the fan and stuff. Yeah. Overall, I liked it. The other thing that I know people are really, really bringing up a lot is the whole end of the universe thing. Mm-hmm. And all I'm going to say there is that the end of the universe probably takes a very long time, and there's probably a lot of places where it's happening. And just because he goes there doesn't mean that the other stuff where the stars were going out wasn't happening. Remember, it wasn't completely dark. The stars were going out, and that was a subsect of humanity in some part of the future that, you know, was trying to get away and find a better civilization stuff. And for those of you listening that aren't sure what I'm talking about, season three, near the end, the Doctor and Martha visit the end of the universe by accident, which just happened here as well because he took the safeguards off the TARDIS. There were so many things that I really like about how they're dropping like hints of why things are working and why things are happening, taking the TARDIS safeguards off, which also explains how we got to the barn, although it doesn't explain how we got to the barn, if you follow me. And Clara being distracted, and that's why she's going to the future of her like family timeline and not her timeline, and like the fact that like Doctor, she's like, isn't it bad if I met myself? And he's like, oh, it's potentially catastrophic, don't do that. And then of course she kept him from meeting himself in the barn and stuff. Like I really like that, the dialogue and this snappy dialogue and the way Capaldi delivers it and just everything he's taken on Who is just fantastic. And the fact that she remains his kind of conscience and sort of his, you know, extension into the world. She cares. He doesn't have to, you know, like she's trying to be nice to the kid in bed and he's ready to just like tell him scary stories. And like, yeah. I don't know. I just,
you know,
I think it's, and or like when he, like, he's just such a curmudgeon. Like he's like, oh, you ever notice like you put your coffee cup down and then you come back and it's gone. And the guy's like, yeah, it happens all the time. And then like he steals his coffee. Like, there's so many little touches that I think are doing such a great job. And I don't know. I'm still of the mind that the good outweighs the bad right now.
I like that. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Stephen.
I was just going to say, I was trying to respond to something that Sean said a while ago, but then he kept kicking me in the fucking teeth.
It was my turn. You guys talk a lot.
I know. I'm just
joking. I would never kick you in the teeth.
I know. I would just block you in the closet. I can't stand that, you baby. the thing I was just going to say about, and it's a positive thing, so, you know, you should appreciate it. Mm-hmm. Your girlfriend, liking your lady or whatever, liking this season, you know, and liking Capaldi and everything like that. And like the whole idea of like, you know, it's, you always remember your first doctor and stuff like that. That's been a thing that we've said forever. If you take all that into account and you look at Doctor Who as it stands now, and if you were to strip away all of us and we were to come to this show right now and we had never watched all like Tennant and Christopher Eccleston and Smith and all this stuff, you have to still recognize that, good or bad, there is nothing else like Doctor Who on TV right now. And there never has been, really. The only times that there have been were like, you know, they were blatant ripoffs of the thing, you know. You kind of just, it's almost kind of impossible to be like Doctor Who because it's so just ramshackle and like thrown together and it's just like it's held together with chewing gum. So, you know, objective or subjective quality of the episodes aside, somebody coming to this show for the first time is probably thinking like, what the hell is this? You know, it's probably very easy to like for any level of the quality of the show to make an imprint right away.
Yep.
I totally agree. And Sean, you bring up that point of your girlfriend getting into Capaldi. I think it spurred a couple of things in my head just now. This latest episode these last two episodes, and again, I mentioned thematically because they're both kind of the Doctor trying to explain certain things. In both of them, they're things that are extremely relatable to new viewers, right? So, Doctor Who, you're going to have an average person. He can go back in time to go back to, I don't know, Robin Hood. Go back to, it's the first time where he's really gone back to something, in a while at least, maybe, that he's gone back to something that everybody knows about. Everyone knows about Robin Hood, right? Robin Hood's this historic character. Why hasn't the Doctor gone back to a historic character? Why does he always go back to, you know, an apprentice in the king's court, or you know, a queen who kind of knows about certain mystical things but doesn't talk about them, you know, and the girl in the fireplace? I think This is the first time in a while, at least, that he has gone back in time to someone like this, and people can relate to that. They can say, oh, you know, the Doctor is he's doing this really kind of campy but understandable character. The show is, and his banter with him is kind of fantastic because, you know, in Robot of Sherwood, they're both kind of the same person when they have that, at least when they have that conversation in the jail cell. They're both really pompous dudes, and in the end, they're both wrong. So I like that aspect, and I like that. This episode, listen, it's something they repeat it over and over again. Something that is kind of bored into the back of our heads when, you know, when we're kids, when we're children, is that things happen in the house, things that go bump in the night, things that spook us. And in this episode, the Doctor is clawing at ways to try and explain it. Right? He's everything he can do to explain why the sounds show up, why we're hearing things, that it's probably just a friend behind him, but don't turn around. You'll give in to the fear. Your body's causing the hairs to stand up. It's, I love that aspect. And it's, all of us feel this. All of us, you know, we'll hear things in the middle of the night, something, you know, something will move or shift in our sink. It happens to me a lot. You know, you'll hear a dish kind of shift in the sink, and it'll freak you out. You know, what happened? Where did that noise come from? All of us can relate to it. All of us want to know what the answer is to these. And in both essences, both times with Robot of Sherwood and this, Clara has said, don't worry about it. Don't try to solve everything. Let it be. Let Robin Hood be Robin Hood. Let things that go bump in the night be things that go. You don't have to solve everything, Mr. Who.
Yeah.
You know, let it happen. And I think that made things kind of relatable. Doctor? Oh, doctor.
Please, Mr. Who was my father.
Mr. Who the father.
Mr. Doctor.
But no, I don't know if that makes sense. It's like they're both kind of easily relatable because they're. The overall subject matter isn't born of Doctor Who lore, even though there are touches that are there. Overall, anybody could kind of jump into these two episodes and say, okay, I kind of understand what Doctor Who is. First, you know, Robot of Sherwood goes back in time. There's robots and aliens. There's lasers, whatever. And in this other one, there's a whole psychological aspect that's really kind of breaks that fourth wall, you know.
Yeah. I mean, like, I think what you're pointing out is kind of, like, very similar to what we were talking about earlier with Clara is increasingly becoming the leader of this, like, you know, this little scheme they've got going. Like, and the Doctor is very much, at least, the, you know, Capaldi's Doctor is very much the companion almost. And I think that is way of much more, much better illustrated in Robot of Sherwood, which is one of my favorite parts of the episode, which is an episode I really, really liked.
Mm.
Like, it's weird because I came into Robot of Sherwood very dubious and like, expecting a lot because it was Mark Gatiss and I was really excited about it and thought like, oh yeah, that's goofy fun. That's all right. And then really love the ending. Whereas with Listen, I came into it like seeing the children stuff and thinking like, oh boy, I remember Fear Her and that dollhouse kid thing with the living dolls and everything like that. I remember those real hot bangers of Doctor Who lore every time they try to bring a kid into these stories. And came away thinking like the first half of it, or you know, the first three quarters of it were great, and then the ending was terrible. So I completely different expectations and completely different results for me both times.
That's funny because I know a lot of people hated the ending of Sherwood, hated it. Arrow hits the engine and it gets to you're missing the point. Like, I mean, I feel like the show can differentiate between really like, and again, you know, you guys know that I'm the guy who just loses his mind over plot holes and logic gaps and stuff.
Yeah.
But I feel like when you go in knowing the type of episode it's gonna be, you kind of let certain things go. Like the light sci-fi it doesn't work in Sherwood. Like there's a lot of those gaps that just don't make much sense. But when you sit there and realize they went back to visit Robin Hood and it's clearly just for a lark and it's clearly one of those one-off episodes that's designed to be cheesy and is designed to just let the actors do their thing and bounce off each other and have fun, I thought it was fantastic. Like, I had such a fun time watching that. I watched it two or three times, as I often do with, you know, prepping for these shows and stuff. But I was never bored. Like, the interactions between Robin and the Doctor were just awesome. And it's funny because the ending, it actually took a few times to really hit me because I honestly was like, oh, they're all robots. Or like the whole point of this was that, you know, it was Doctor Who-y sci-fi and whatever. But then the whole speech about how, you know, maybe if we just, like, obviously we don't think of ourselves as heroes, but maybe if we just pretend, other people will take up the mantle and be here, like be inspired, right? And I thought that was kind of awesome. Yeah. Like when I sat and really thought about it, I was like, okay, Robin Hood and his goofy merry men and his over-the-top archery skills and this whole thing did exist. I mean, granted, with the Who spin, like the sheriff was obviously like half man, half robot, and these robots were in the castle and sort of stuff. But like, what a great message at the end, right? And like, what a great way to wrap it all together. And I don't know. I thought that whole episode was just a lot of fun. And just watching Capaldi act, oh my god,
he's so
good. He just elevates everything around him. The one criticism I have, and it actually is echoed by a lot of people, and it might just be selfish of me, I don't think we're getting enough Capaldi. No, seriously, I think With so much, and of course, this might be, you know, kind of a side effect of elevating Clara as a legit companion, a well-rounded character. We're seeing so much of her and how she interacts and these relationship things and everything else that we're getting it at the expense of Capaldi.
I definitely agreed. Capaldi, and I think we're at the point now where we can legitimately say that he is the doc, not only the doctor we need, but the doctor we've deserved for a long time. Just in
I think we
terms
still
of,
need more of them.
I bet we need more of
We
him. We
need
need
more
more.
Capaldi.
Yep. Yeah, totally agree.
yeah
Do we
but I
want
really hope that the stuff we're seeing recurring with him, you know, the way his brain is works or doesn't work, because apparently he's got some issues, you know, working through things, the chalkboard and like his aloof nature and trying to figure out who he is and stuff.
Listing everything. The way he was listing everything in Listen was fantastic.
And
We
I
had
just
nobody else to
I
talk
hope
to.
this is all going to be like, you know, this is stuff that they're just going to keep building on. And what is he doing on the chalkboard, right? Like, what is he trying to figure out? Like, what are these equations, you know, what are they adding up to? Is he a little like in this new set of regeneration cycles, which has never been done for him before? I don't know if it's ever been done for Time Wars, but it's never been done for him.
Done
Like,
by the
has is a
master.
side effect that he, like, for all his curmudgeon brilliance, is he a little crazy, right? Like, well, I mean, doctor's always a little crazy, but more than usual, you know, and standoffish and everything else.
To your point, Sean, about we're not getting enough Capaldi. Like, I think that like Robot of Sherwood really does like illustrate that amazingly, and it's like a kind of a point that I really wanted to bring up to you guys because I really wanted to hear what you guys thought about it. And it was basically that if Matt Smith had or David Tennant had starred in Robot of Sherwood, they would have been like super, like the way that it would have been characterized is like the doctor would have been super, super, those doctors specifically would have been so excited. They'd have been like fascinated by the idea that like, wait, this is fake. Like, you're not real. How can you be real? But then they'd given him a big hug and said, like, we're gonna figure this out together, and at the end we're gonna have an adventure and all this stuff, and maybe there would be something tragic. But then yeah, like Capaldi's just like, man, fuck this. Like, and then Clara, on the other hand, is the one that's like, you're real. Like, how could you be real? I know
She's
you're fake. And
starstruck.
like, yeah, she but she is Tennant. She is Smith.
Yeah.
Like, she acts exactly like those doctors would have in the past. She's more doctor than the doctor in like a sort of young and energetic way that like even Donna Noble, like maybe never Donna Noble was always like smarter than the doctor in a lot of ways. Like, she thought about the things that the doctor didn't think about. Clara just is the doctor, like to a certain degree. Like, she's just a different era of doctor, the one that we don't have right now.
This is almost a flip-flop situation of Donna and you know and David Tennant's doctor with here with Capaldi and Coleman, because you have Capaldi is now the one like Donna who's independent. Clara's just kind of along for the ride sometimes, just like the doctor is almost along for Donna's, you know, along the ride with Donna. But I do like that they both kind of carry that same weight, and it's starting to work really well. Should we dive into some of the feedback from our amazing listeners?
Yeah, let's wind down because
I
I
like
don't
that.
know everybody else's schedules, but we
Yeah,
should
and I want to play Destiny tonight.
Well, I've been doing
anyways,
this whole time.
but
Yep.
before we dive in, so I'm sure Marcus would have rated maybe 3 for Sherwood and negative 50 for Listen. Steven, what do you give both episodes? And by the way,
Listen,
we could totally keep talking about these. Like, I know I feel
sure.
like while we're starting to repeat ourselves, I feel like we could also just have talked for another hour just on
Yeah.
these two episodes combined. So anyway, sorry, Steve.
Yeah, no worries. For Listen, it's the Mass Effect 3 thing for me. It's the Mass Effect 3 argument. Sorry, I was chewing when you put me on the spot there. So I was trying like very rapidly to hurry it up. It's the Mass Effect 3 thing. It's like it's the sum of the experience, not the ending, you know. For as much as I think the ending is dumb, I think the whole episode is great. Like, I think the performances are great. I think Danny Pink is a super interesting character, and I want to see way more of him. Clara
Oh,
is
yeah.
getting better and better and better. The tension and the fear, like, I was actually afraid of like some of the stuff that was happening in this episode more than like I'm afraid of like some horror movies. And the tension they build is amazing. I have problems with the ending. I think it's a. It, I don't think it sticks it, and I think it raises more questions than it answers. Even though it's like giving us the idea that it's going to be answering questions, but overall, I still really, really enjoyed it. So I give it a 4 out of 5.
I
For
give
as negative as I was about it in the first 5 minutes.
I give Robot of Sherwood a 3 out of 5. Just totally fun, campy. didn't blow me away, but I had fun watching. It's the destiny of Doctor Who episodes. It's a 3 out of 5. I give it a solid 5 out of 5. Again, my favorite episode this season, seconded, you know, behind the 50th, maybe, over the last 2 years. Sorry, Marcus. And the main reason I know this, that I like this episode so much, is because as I'm watching it, my daughter was sitting next to me. I have a wonderful 4-year-old, almost 5-year-old daughter. And that opening scene with the kid in bed, I had to turn it off because she was already afraid. She was already freaked out. And so here's the sad part. She said she never wants to watch Doctor Who again because that moment scared her so much. So I'm going to have to ease her back in with – she loves the Daleks, surprisingly. Anyways, I knew that – and there were some genuinely – again, like you said, Stephen, genuinely freaky elements throughout the episode. I enjoyed it. I loved it. I thought it was great. 5 out of 5 for me.
I don't mean to cut you off, but you interjected there before I could get to my Robot of Sherwood score.
Oh, sorry.
No, it's all right. We can do Listen, and then we'll all do Sherwood. I'm really high on Listen. I think I've said why quite a few times now. I'm going to give a solid 4.5.
Okay. And Robot of Sherwood, Steven?
So Robot of Sherwood. I don't think I made this clear. During the discussion, so I just want to say the ending thing where the Doctor is talking to Robin, and Robin is just like, maybe, you know, like, history is a burden and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, it's better people think I'm imaginary. The reason I love that is because it taps into something that I've, like, a personal belief I've held for a long, long time, that fiction is equally as impactful mm-hmm. and important to a person's life as reality. Like, you know, when I was a kid, I probably learned more about, like, honor and sacrifice and doing the right thing from Optimus Prime than I did from my own parents. And there's this weird sort of acknowledgement of that idea that just because something is made up doesn't mean it's not real. At the end of this episode, between Doctor, who is a fictional character, we as the audience know he's fictional, speaking to a character that he knows is fictional. And I absolutely adored that part of it because mm-hmm. of that specifically. And because of that, I give the episode, like, I think overall the episode was just goofy fun. The arrow was stupid. That the golden arrow, that is, being able to penetrate a spaceship, it was dumb. But, like, even so, even that, like, the ending of this episode elevates it so much for me. And, like, just the idea that Clara is becoming, like, coming so much into her own, and we get to see so much of her on screen. I give it another 4 out of 5 as well. Like, I really, really had a ball.
Sean?
I agree.
I love
no,
it.
Again,
Sean, yep.
Capaldi and Robin, you know, Clara doing her thing, and the Doctor putting his take on, you know, the lore, like the archery contest, using a tricked out exploding arrow, like
the heat seeking arrow or whatever.
I'm gonna give it a 4. I can't, as much fun, I'm gonna sound like a hypocrite here, as much fun as it is and as much as I did like it, there are a couple things I would have liked that they had done a little better, or at least expanded on a little bit, you know, with the villains and stuff like that.
Yeah, I can see that.
But it was fun. It was, to me, it felt like what Doctor Who should feel like more often than not. It's lighthearted. And, you know, here's this take on a character with the Doctor, like I think you or Steve were saying, where, you know, we would have seen Tennant or Smith being all zany and goofy and dancing around with Robin. In reality, Capaldi wanted none of it. And, like, you know, at one point he told the guy, if you were real, you would be dead in 6 months because of all the disease in your blood. And he's like, I am real. And he's like, oh, well, goodbye. Like, this Doctor is amazing. He's amazing. And it's all the little things that are adding up to do that. And just the whole episode from start to finish was good. Like, just really, really fun. And I would love to see more of that. I don't really know where they're going with the rest of the season. I know next week is a time heist episode. I don't know if it's going to veer more fun and lighthearted, or if it's going to be more darker and Moffat-y, but the Sherwood was great. It really was just great fun Who, you know, that you can just sit back and relax without overthinking it. So, yeah, 4 for me.
Yeah, Sherwood is, even though I gave it a 3, I think it's the kind of episode that, you know, when it shows up in reruns on BBC America or wherever, I'll happily sit down and watch it again. It was just, you know, one of those fun episodes that you can kind of, it's very easy to digest, and we need those.
It's like the Fires of Pompeii. They even look a lot like the things in the Fires of Pompeii.
In fact, some of the same actors were both, including the actress that played Amy Pond. Anyway, so let's move on to comments from our wonderful wonderful readers and listeners. And I do say readers because we do have the website. Please make sure you're visiting lonelytardis.com. We have the post going up with the podcast. Leave your comments, your feedback about the show there, things that we said, and we will also, you know, dive into some of those comments on the next episode. In regards to listen, we have Thomas, who maybe wrote more than we said in this podcast. Thomas's response was fantastic.
Paraphrase, though.
Paraphrase.
I'm not gonna read the whole thing.
Okay.
No. I'm just making a point.
It's like one of those times where, like, we're not going to go deep in the recap, and then here's our 10-minute recap.
My recaps were awesome this week, guys. They were fantastic. Thomas, really long response, and I've read through it a couple times. I enjoyed a lot of great points in there. Definitely, if you get a chance, read it, and feel free to reply to it too, because getting these conversations going is good. But he brings up one point that I brought this up earlier in kind of a different spin. He enjoyed listen, but he also said that last week's episode and this week's episode, he said they were huge wastes of time. And I think what he means after reading through the description goes back to what I mean or when I said earlier, which is these are two really nice standalone episodes. Thematically, they're kind of the same with some elements, but standalone episodes that don't necessarily really have to force anything plot-wise into the season. I'm totally fine with that. Again, I like these that are more digestible, easy for new fans to get into. I don't think it's a waste of time in that way, but I do like the fact that they're kind of the fun one-offs.
If you look at it as the whatever paradise, what do they call it, promised land? Promised if you look land. At that as Heaven. Being like the thing that matters right now. Then yeah, sure, it's a waste of time. But if you look at like I keep harping on, like the evolution of Clara, like I think I would actually really dislike Capaldi's Doctor if it weren't for Clara becoming that Matt Smith type character. He's just so he's belligerent in like a goofy fun way. Sure, I get it, but like he's so petulant at the same time. He's just like so mean to everybody, like just for the sake of being mean. Like I feel like I'm watching The Blacklist, that terrible show. And sometimes, but then you've got Clara there to be that counterbalance, to be the David Tennant, the Matt Smith, and just Jenna Coleman just coming into her own so much as an actor in these moments. Like in that sense, I don't think it's a waste of time at all. Right. I think we're getting more characterization of a companion than we've had since probably Donna. Well, like we keep saying Donna Noble, like just because we love her so much. But that's how I feel.
Definitely. Please respond. Feel free to read his post in the listen discussion. We'll do these discussions for every episode of the show, and they'll give us stuff to talk to about when we do our recordings. Also,
they'll give us stuff to talk to.
And about
like a coffee mug.
Yeah, when you're hey, yelling at my screen. Why did you say that, Thomas? Another one of our longtime fans, Annalie, posted on our Facebook page, which you can also join. You can say Annalie.
For some reason, I've just been pronouncing it phonetically this whole time, not like
you were saying Annanelli.
I'm not gonna try. I'm just gonna say hi. Hello. Hi.
Hello.
I was saying Annelli.
Annelli. Yeah. Annelli. Annelli. Yeah. I put emphasis on the wrong syllable sometimes. Anyways, she says, "Thought it was a great episode. She was suitable. Freaked out, which was definitely the intent of listen. And to the fact we're a wandering car light." Spooked her out outside her home.
And
she said it was fun in some beats. Her heart stopped a bit when the crying boy she found out who the crying boy was. Spoiler, it's the doctor. We think
spoiler, it was me.
We think it was Steven. She likes to ties into the 50th episode with John Hurt. And overall stuff made more sense to her because of that last moment, which I know some of you guys didn't like, but again, she says in the way that it can for this show with such an enigmatic main character, everybody got their moment to shine. She doesn't mention Danny Pink in here. God, Danny Pink is becoming a fantastic character because he's so unsure of himself and being a former, love it, fantastic. I'd love to see him on his own dating show.
The wells thing where it's just I dug 12 wells. Nobody ever talks about that. I love that.
Yep. And she says, Capaldi still rocks, and hope to get lots more years with him. She thinks he's very sexy. I don't go into older men.
The silver fox.
And then finally says the cinematography was splendid in certain parts. And there were some great, the monologue she points out was fantastic in the TARDIS. I actually loved the idea of taking shots of a security camera when they incorporate that into a show, into an episode. Those are always really fun. I also love kind of the overall, almost like the eye, the peeping Tom eye staring into Future Pink's spaceship. I thought that was fantastic. His time machine, that was fantastic. So great thoughts by our dear friend.
Sure. I know I keep dragging this out further, but like yet another like example of like human time travel happening.
Yeah.
Are we ever going to like have the time agency ever acknowledged again in the history of Doctor Who?
Doesn't the Doctor hate other time travelers, like non-Time Lord time travelers? Hasn't that been established?
It sounds like it.
Previous Doctors.
That he didn't think about, or that he didn't comment on that at all. But that said, I choose to look at it, and I choose to do this until they explain it in canon, that this guy, you know, Pink, was so, like, this time travel thing went so bad.
Oh, yeah.
That humans just scrap it for centuries.
I think so too. Yep.
Well, I mean, what year was Captain Jack from around? I mean, we know this is 100 years in the future.
24th century.
Mm-hmm.
24th century. So time travel at that point seems like it's fairly common. So it can't be. They can't scrap it for that long if this is 100 years in our future. So like, you know, I mean, and he comes home. So clearly, somebody's probably thinking like, well, you know, the experiment was like we went too far, but you did time travel and you survived, so that's a good sign.
Mm-hmm.
If this is leading, or if that idea leads to at some point either this season or next, like finally getting to see the time agency in their own era and everything like that, I would be so down for more of that. Like I've been waiting for that since Captain Jack was introduced.
This is the first. Technically, this would be the first kind of modern time traveler using technology, right? Because they showed shots of Pink kind of boarding a time, or you know,
he was the test pilot.
So it's interesting to see where this all goes. But some of our fans on Twitter also replied back. Savior Prodigy says, "I love this episode, so tense, and Capaldi was amazing as always." Yes, definitely, Capaldi is
so good.
The tension, the robot
of Sherwood really was a tense episode. Like the tension was just really there for me the whole time.
You get tense every time you see robots, though.
I mean, you know that thing that happened that one time. It's just like we don't talk about it.
We don't talk about that.
Yeah.
At Shadow's End, JB says, "Much too focused on Clara. The Doctor seems to be becoming more of a child with every episode, with how he behaves." Interesting, definitely interesting thoughts there. The Doctor he's still trying to figure himself out, right? So he still is kind of a kid. And now we actually see him as a kid. So,
That brings us more questions.
How old is he?
I mean, the weird parents thing, the soldier versus academy stuff. Mm-hmm. I wonder if this is before he looks into. Do you look into the untempered schism as an adult and go crazy? That's a kid. No,
it's 10 years old, I think, is what they say.
I wonder if he's done. Maybe he's done that, and that's why he's crying. Didn't he run away from it too?
Oh,
yeah, you're right. Yeah, there you go.
And maybe that's why they say he's never going to be a Time Lord, because he, you know, freaks out as a kid. My last question for the show. I promise.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think we'll ever see the little toy soldier without the gun? Or do you think?
Yes.
I think so.
I was going to say, maybe it serves as symbolism, and that's why he hates soldiers, and that's kind of why he is who he is, because, you know, he can help, but he doesn't need weapons like that. So, I agree with you. I think we could see it again, but it would not surprise me if we never do.
I think he hates soldiers because he's a hypocrite and like doesn't like anything that acknowledges.
Also that. But
to the fact that he is a soldier.
Sure, but the idea of a soldier without a gun, I thought, was a very, very, very powerful.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
He is a soldier
without a gun. When you think about it, right? Except for the times that he has a gun.
Like that episode with Matt Smith and that time with the laser gun where he shot a Cyberman back in the olden days. Those times,
Mustafa Ali Smile. Let's see. I'm trying to read the Twitter handle, which is Really bored
Old
pirate.
Old Spice body spray.
Old Spice body spray. No, really bored. RLY bored pirate. Really bored pirate says, fantastic. Played well on the things we project on our fears. Strangely personal. Ooh, I love that. Strangely personal.
Yep.
Great performances and loved the last scene. Say somebody else besides me loved the last scene. It says, although they should have used different costumes for the mysterious man and woman. Steven, you brought this up, I think, on Twitter, and I totally agree. Did the Time Lords kind of take place back in the 1300s? Because that's kind of the gear they were wearing, right?
I don't think that was me who said that on Twitter, but I definitely thought that as I was watching it. I was just like, what? Like, they've shown Gallifrey, like the Time Lords and the Time. In the olden days, there were characters that, like, dressed fairly normally. Like, there was, like, a Time Lord technician at one point, I remember, that, like, was literally just wearing, like, overalls or something. But, like, these guys are, like farmers and stuff. Yeah. It's just like, really?
No, the doctor must come from super humble beginnings. It's almost, when you think about it, it's almost Jedi-like, right? Where he plays young...
I actually don't think those are the doctor's parents.
Sure. No, I don't think so either. There is aunt and uncle, maybe?
Parents.
Who knows?
So here's a question, and I just broke my own promise. Owen. Do you think people would be less upset if the child doctor thing happened, because obviously we know nothing about parents and his childhood and stuff like that. So I'm all for, like, exploring that. Do you think people would be less upset if it wasn't Clara?
I think so.
If we just kind of saw things, but her not in her... I mean, because you can't... These people who think that there are certain things of who that should be sacred and never talked about or looked upon or indulged or expanded on, I think they're crazy. And I think that if a good writer or really a showrunner or anybody wants to kind of peek at the childhood that we know nothing about before he was an old man, or peek at how, you know, even if he's a young adult or his friendship with the master or his family or any of that stuff, I have no problem with it if it's done properly. And I'm just curious if people have more problem with it because it's this companion that's done literally everything in his time stream ever.
Yeah. No, I actually, like, I mean, I know Marcus kind of feels that way, but I agree with you. Like, I think we should, like, delve more into it. Part of one of the things that bothered me about the ending of this episode, you know, Clara, no Clara, was that they didn't show more. Like, we don't see him, like, we don't see his face. Mm-hmm. We don't see, you know, we barely hear him speak at all. We don't see his parents' face. We don't see what situation he's in. Like,
Do we know if those were his parents?
We don't know.
We don't. Like, that's just it. Like, I actually don't think they were. You know, whatever.
What if the doctor's an orphan?
Maybe.
Whatever they were to him, like, we don't see them. Like, they just refuse to pull back the curtain any more than, like, than enough to, like, have Moffat say, like, okay, I made a difference. But he, like, he's too afraid to go past the barrier that Russell T. Davies erected. Like, we still don't get to see like, just more of Gallifrey. Like, we've gone, you know, like, a decade now without, like, seeing any of this stuff other than Rassilon and all that stuff. And, like, the Time Lords during the Time War and all that stuff. But we don't get to see, like, the real Gallifrey before it went nuts. And I want more of that. I want to see the Doctor as a kid. I want to see the Doctor's parents. I want to see the Doctor, you know, I want to see the Doctor's kid, you know, his kid, sons or daughters or whatever.
Kid who? Right, because he had a granddaughter.
He did. And even in Listen, he said, when he puts Rupert, you know, still Rupert, to sleep, he looks at Clara and says, "Dad skills."
Yeah, and that was fantastic. Dad skills.
You know, they've hinted many, many times that he used to have kids. I want to see his kids. Mm-hmm. Like, I want to see what happened to his kids. I want to hear what happened to his kids. I want more of this stuff. I want the universe to be bigger and more fleshed out and stuff like that. I don't necessarily need it to be this big mysterious thing for the rest of my life.
Family who? And then final message is from a tweet that I have pulled up here. It's from Scott Nixon, also known as Weird Fan Fiction on Twitter. And he says, thought it was a mess. They seem lost this season. So obviously this is Marcus is a different Twitter handle. But that is a recurring, that is, I don't want to say it's a recurring comment that we're hearing, but it's, I've heard that a couple occasions now that, the season is kind of going nowhere, but I can't defend it apart from what I've said before. But I'm still interested. I still have love and passion for this season, and we're only four episodes in. We hit the halfway mark this weekend, which isn't it insane? We're halfway through this season this weekend, which is it's bonkers.
Yeah, that is pretty nutty.
And then we got we're gonna have basically we get 6 more episodes, then we wait until Christmas. So
that depresses me so much.
Yeah, please, I know. Let's not talk about it. We'll do fan fiction after. Well, during the break. But anyways, that's all we have for fan feedback. Please, you can feel free to reply to us at Lonely TARDIS on Twitter or on our Facebook page. Just do a Facebook search for Lonely TARDIS. Our website, LonelyTARDIS.com. Or individually, you can find us. And we'll get to our Twitter handles just a second from now. I do want to say, finally, please comment on our iTunes page. Leave a rating. Let us know if you like the show or not. Hopefully you do. All comments are accepted. And we're really hoping to keep getting more and more people listening to our show, which definitely looks like is happening because we're getting responses from all kinds of great fans. So
definitely. Hopefully in a line that we seemed a little lost this episode and unsure where we were going as we rambled about two different episodes.
Yeah, it's
and then tough. Marcus just ranted like a crazed rant.
Well, that's just Marcus, you know.
I went to go chicken when he was doing that, so, yeah. You know, whatever.
You can find us individually. You can find me at Dolly Domofsky. You can find Marcus at Annoyed Gamer. You can find Steven.
You can find me at Mr. Who. please, my son is the doctor. No, you've done worse, Sean. At Steven Strom, StevenStrom.
And you can find Sean...
at Sean Norton, SHAUNNORTON.
And all those links will be on our, on the blog post here. So, again, thank you very much, everybody, for listening. It was a supersized episode. An hour and a half is what we're basically closing in on. Covered a lot, and there's still so much to talk about with these episodes. I'm sure, just like that first episode, which we've come back to a couple times, we'll be coming back to these as well down the line. Again, thank you, everybody, and we'll see you guys on the next Lonely TARDIS.
What are you doing?
That's the jazz hands version.
That's the new song. That's the new, like, crazy, weird techno beat that they've got on the new episodes.